Samanta chakkhavalesu attra gacchantu devata sadhammam muni rajasa sunantu sakamokadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa Bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. And there's another reason why I don't want to entertain you, because when I read the sutta, all the sutta preached by the Buddha, Buddha never make jokes. Because when you laugh during Dhamma talk, you lose your mindfulness. And after go out from the Dhamma talk, you forget all the Dhamma. Then I waste my energy to share the profound Dhamma, and people cannot receive it well. For this reason, that for this occasion, because all of you are monastics now, so I won't entertain you. Okay? Please forgive me if I don't make you laugh. Okay? Okay, so we have come to Dhamma Nupassana Satipatthana, contemplation on Dhamma. And we have talked about how to contemplate the five hindrances, also the five aggregates of clinging, and the four noble truths. Today I will add one more. There is contemplation on six sense bases. What is this six sense basis? Let us understand what are the six sense basis first. First is eye base. Eye base. Second, ear base. Third, nose base. Fourth, tongue base. Fifth, body base. Number six, mind base. These are six bases. And each basis takes its respective objects. You got to remember the six bases and its respective objects. This 12, Buddha said, this is the all. One day, the student asked the Buddha, what is the all? Buddha said, this is the all. Six bases and the six objects. So what is the respective object for eyes? What your eyes sees?
Visible
object, right, visible object. And the sound hears, the nose hears the sounds. So sound is the object of ear. Then the nose smell the fragrance or smell. Frequency. And the tongue takes taste as object. And the body takes touch. Potaba, touch. Touch including three. Earth element, fire element, and wind element. These three are called touch, are called tangible. For example, you touch the table, what do you feel? Hardness. Hardness is earth element. Sometimes you feel cold as well. Cold is fire element. Then sometimes you feel like pressure, this which is wind element. Flowing you cannot feel. Water element is not to be discerned by way of touch. It's by way of mind. Okay, so portable, portable, touch, tangible. Touch including three elements of earth, fire, and wind. Okay. Then The last base is mind base. Mind base take various of things. Thinking of the past, reflecting the future, all the image, mental image, and all the Dhamma. So mind object. So in this Ayatana Baba, under the contemplation on Dhamma, how Buddha taught. Buddha said, Chakkhuccha Pajjanati, Rupaccha Pajjanati. Chakkhuccha, Chakkhu means eye. Pajjanati means knows. He knows eyes. What do you mean he knows eyes? I know eye too. But the way we know eyes and a practitioner knows eyes are very different. He knows eyes, Chakkhuccha Pajjanati, Rupaccha Pajjanati. He knows visible object. Okay, how do we understand? Buddha said, he knows eyes. How you understand? You know.
Believe what you see, or what you see is what makes you aware about what you know.
This more than that. Very simple. He knows eyes. Buddha means that he knows eyes, he knows this only materiality, not myself. As simple as this. I is materiality. We have five aggregates, right? I is only materiality aggregate. So he knows eyes. I mean he knows this is rupa khanda, not a self, not a person. A practicing person, a practicing yogi knows in this way. He knows eyes. I is internal object. Then he knows visible object. Rupancha pajjanati. He knows visible object. Visible object is also materiality aggregate, but is external. I is internal materiality aggregate. Visible object is external materiality aggregate or form aggregate, rupa khanda. Therefore, Buddha say, Chakkhuccha pajjanati, rupaccha pajjanati. Then Buddha further said that dependent on these two, what are the two? Eyes and visible object. Dependent on these two fetters, F-E-T-T-E-R, samyojana, fetters or refinements, samyojana, dependent on these two fetters arise. Tincha pajjanati, he knows. This is what Buddha taught. So let me explain to you. When the eye sees the beautiful object, the fetters arise or not?
Yes.
Okay. What fetter?
Desire.
Okay. Desire, loba. Okay. Tincha pajjanati, he knows also. He knows what? He knows the desire has arisen. Tincha pajjanati, so he knows. However, most of the time we forget. We are not mindful, we forget. Why? Because we are not used to this practice. We are used to react. When desire arises, we just react, hold on, cling to it as mine, as myself, with craving and with wrong view. This is our habitual way of reaction because we are not trained, right? We are not trained in Dhamma Nupassana Satipatthana. Therefore, you should train yourself when the eye sees something, you know there is eyes, there is visible object, and dependent on these two samyojana fetters. Arise. You must know also the fetter has arisen. Knowing is called sati, mindfulness. Without knowing of it is called not mindful. Not mindful. Therefore, this samyojana fetters also become the object of become the object of your mindfulness. Any object that arises in your body and mind become the object of your mindfulness. So, tincha pajanati. Then, Buddha say, sotacha pajanati. Then, sadacha pajanati. He knows ears. He knows sounds. Then, when the sound, let's say, abusive word, the sound, abusive word come into contact with the sound, with the ear, dependent on this ear and sound, samyojana, samyojana, reformments arise. Tincha pajanati, he knows. So what is the reformment that arises when the abusive word come to the contact of your ear?
Aversion.
Aversion, anger. Do you know that? Do you know that? We know, but we also react, right? We know, but we also react. This means that no mindfulness. This is not pajanati. Pajanati means he knows anger as anger. No reaction. But we know and yet we react. Therefore, we are behaving like ordinary person, not a practicing monastic. Then, one after you know, you know, anger has arisen, you know, anger as anger, anger as anger. This is sati. However, in the whole discourse of Satipatthana Sutta, in the whole discourse of four foundations of mindfulness, Buddha didn't only emphasize mindfulness. Buddha emphasized two important mental factors. The first one is mindfulness. The second one is what? What?
Wisdom.
Good. Wisdom. No wisdom, no nibbana. No wisdom, no the end of suffering. Okay? Wisdom is the predominant mental factors in the teaching of the Buddha. So, you know, okay, you know aversion. You're mindful of aversion and you do not react with like or dislike. You're mindful of aversion. This is called mindfulness. Mindfulness alone is not enough for liberation. You further have to apply wisdom. Wisdom. So first, tincha pajanati, you know aversion has arisen, then mindful of it, don't react, mindful of it, aversion has arisen, aversion as aversion. You hold your mindfulness. Do you understand what do you mean? What it means, you hold it. I mean your mindfulness must be sustained on that mental state of anger, sustained there. Just you hold something, you hold it, don't let go of it first. So your mindfulness is sustained on that mental state of anger. When you can hold your mindfulness on that mental state of anger, it gives the chance for anger to pass away. If you don't hold your mindfulness on that anger and you quickly react to it, and you may think this anger is permanent, right? Permanent, because you react to it. You have no chance to see the anger ceases. Therefore, mindfulness is not only one moment of mindfulness. Sustaining mindfulness is very important. Buddha said, only by sustained mindfulness, then wisdom arises. This is a very important statement. Please write down. Only by sustaining mindfulness. Sustaining mindfulness means you hold your mindfulness on that mental state for a period of time. Only then the nature of that mental state will unfold itself. What is the nature of that mental state? What is the nature of that? What is the nature of that phenomena or mental state? Very good, impermanent. Sabbe sankhara anicca, Buddha say, all phenomena has the nature of arising and passing away. But if you do not hold, if you do not sustain your mindfulness on that mental state, you are unable to see its arising and passing away. For example, your mind jump here, this, that, one object arise, you jump, another object, you jump, another object, you jump here, jump, jump. How are you going to see the arising? And you can see arising, but you will never see passing away because your mind is jumping here and there. Your mindfulness is not sustained on one object. Okay, is it clear? Now I'm teaching you how to practice vipassana. Okay? Without what?
Hatred.
Anger is hatred.
You come with anger, but then without hatred.
No. Anger itself is hatred. You can say no reaction, but you can say no hatred. Anger itself is hatred. You only say that I see anger as anger, but I do not react, then it's okay. When anger arises, there's no hatred. That's not possible. Your statement is not correct. Okay? Okay. So, why should we hold the object? Why should we apply the sustained mindfulness? For what reason? Please answer me so that I want to make sure you understand. Then I will proceed. If you don't understand, I will repeat. Right? Okay, yes, very good. So your mindfulness hold onto the object for two reasons. First, because the nature of that object itself, that object can be body, can be feeling, can be mental state, right? Can be Dhamma. So, as Buddha says, sabbe sankhara anicca. So that mental state phenomena is called sankhara. That sankhara has nature of arising and passing away. So when you hold your mindfulness on that object, then the nature of arising and passing away will unfold itself. This is the first reason. Second reason, with sustaining mindfulness, then the wisdom follow after that mindfulness. Now, wisdom penetrate into that true nature as anicca, dukkha, anatta. Mindfulness cannot understand anicca, dukkha, anatta. Mindfulness only know it as it is, anger as anger. But mindfulness cannot understand impermanent suffering and non-self. Only panya, wisdom, can penetrate, remove the darkness that cover that phenomena. So mindfulness, the wisdom, remove the darkness, that cover that phenomena, then the nature of anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanent suffering and non-self will reveal itself. So for two reasons that we should hold the sati, mindfulness. First is to allow the nature of the phenomena to unfold itself. Secondly, for the wisdom to arise, to penetrate into it. These are the two reasons that we should hold the mindfulness on that particular object. This is the way of vipassana. Okay? Is it clear? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, should I proceed?
Yes.
Okay, now come back to Dhammanupassana. So dependent on the ear, dependent on the sound, he knows the ear, he knows the sound. Dependent on both factor, refinements arise, he also know mindfulness. He also know. And I want to go one step further. Why this factor or refinements, samyojana, arise? Why?
You do wrongly.
Perception. Because to contact past experience, ear and wish, you.
Okay, yes, good. She got Abhidhamma base, that's why she can understand precisely what I want. Okay, because of the contact of the sound and the ear. Because of the contact on the sound and the ear, samyojana arises. There is only one factor among many factors. Another factor is what? For some people, abusive word come to contact with the ear, he has no anger, right? So, pasa, contact is only one factor, not the main factor. The abusive word come to contact to the ear. For somebody, no factor, no refinement arise. Why? Why?
Because for one might be a neutral feeling and for another might be an unpleasant feeling.
Why he has neutral feeling?
Because the words are not targeted.
That's your imagination.
Because he has right view and wisdom.
Yes, because he has wise attention. Because he has wise attention, he attend to the sound wisely. How he attend to the sound wisely? When you hear the abusive word, he just hear it sound as sound. He does not interpret it as abusive word. I am hurt. He abused me. I am hurt. If you react in this way, of course anger arises, right? This is called unwise attention. Therefore, to prevent fetter or defilements to arise, you have to apply wise attention. Venerable Sariputta, in his teaching on Mahasati Paropama Sutta, the greatest discourse on elephant's footprint in Majjhima Nikaya. Now he said that when the sound comes to contact with the ear, then he contemplates there is sound. He doesn't contemplate there is abusive sound. Abusive sound is your own interpretation because you feel you are hurt. That's why you regard it as abusive sound. So he contemplate there is sound. Then he contemplate there is ear. Then he contemplate because of the contact, impingement of the sound to the ear, and unpleasant feeling arises. Unpleasant feeling arises. Not yet aversion. Just unpleasant feeling. Even Arahant has unpleasant feeling, but no aversion. Then he further contemplate this is sati, mindfulness. As I say, mindfulness alone is never enough. So Venerable Sariputta contemplate again. Contact is impermanent, sound is impermanent, ear is impermanent, and the feeling that arises dependent on this contact is also impermanent. When he contemplate in this way, then no aversion, no samyojana, no defilement arises. This is the way of practice, Vipassana way. I remember many years ago when I was, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when I was in Burma practicing this Samatha meditation. I have a very close relationship with my teacher, Pao Xiaodao, because I'm the first foreigner nun living there. So one day, every time before he came for Pindapat, he would stand there waiting for the gong to be struck. And behind him, maybe 100 of monks. And I have the privilege to go and talk to him before the meal, the Pindapat starts. So every time I go to talk to him, so one day maybe I take a little bit more time to talk to him. So the time for Pindapat is delayed. And the kapya get very angry with me. Then he shouted me in front of 100 people, a lay person. A lay person shouted me in front of 100 monks. At that time, I feel very shameful. Because forget to contemplate. Ego is hurt. My ego is hurt. Forget to contemplate. At that time, I also don't know how to contemplate, frankly speaking, because I only practice Samatha. Okay, so I feel my ego is hurt because in Pa'au, I have very good privilege. Everybody respect me. How can this lay person shouted at me in front of 100 people? My teacher also never shouted at me like that. So I feel very, I was insulted. But that feeling is very unpleasant because I don't have wise attention, right? I think wrongly. I only thought my ego is hurt, so therefore I feel very unpleasant. And this unpleasant made me feel that no, I got to get rid of this unpleasant feeling. And suddenly I remember the Venerable Sariputta's teaching. Sound is impermanent, contact. What the layperson shouted me, that abusive word is impermanent, unpleasant is unpleasant feeling is impermanent. So when I contemplate in this way, within just 1 minute, all my unpleasant feeling just gone with the wind, and I become equanimous again. So this is the way of practice. As long as your mindfulness, therefore Buddha said, the arising of the mindfulness, the arising of the sati can be slow, right? Just like my case. The arising of sati is so slow that I indulge in my own thinking. The ego is hurt. But the moment, Buddha said, the moment the mindfulness arises, then the defilements, the fetters, is eliminated immediately. Just like a drop of water on the heated plate, heated for a long time, the plate, a drop of water on it will immediately vaporize. Zhenhua, immediately vaporize. That's what Buddha said. Therefore, our arising of mindfulness is always slow one. Only Arahant can arise immediately. Then no reformant can enter. But our arising of mindfulness is always slow. But the moment it arises, it can eliminate the refinements immediately. So, okay, come back to the Dhamma, Nupassana, Satipatthana, the six bases. So sometimes we investigate why this anger arises, why this greed arises. And then you understand, because of ear, because of the sound, and because of the contact of ear and sound, then samyojana, fetters arise. Is the sound permanent or impermanent? Is the ear permanent or impermanent? So depend on what is impermanent, that samyojana, defilement arises, anger arises. How can the anger be permanent because their causes are impermanent? So the anger also cannot be permanent since the anger arises depend on the impermanent factors. Therefore, the effect of anger also impermanent since they are dependent on the impermanent factors. How can the effect be permanent when the causes are impermanent? So sometimes you got to investigate in this way. This investigation is not thinking. It's called wise attention. It's also the wisdom. We call Dhamma Vichaya. The seven factors of enlightenment. Do you know the seven factors of enlightenment? Yes or no?
No.
The second factor of enlightenment is called Dhamma Vichaya. Investigation factor. Which I feel is largely ignored at this present moment, at this time, because most practicing yogi only emphasize mindfulness. They do not emphasize this investigation factor, Dhamma Vichaya, Dhamma Vichaya, enlightenment factor. So when you investigate in this way, the causes are impermanent. How can the effect of anger be permanent? This one way of investigation. And also we can investigate, it depends on why this factor, why this anger or greed arises, because they are dependent on the eyes, on the visible object, on the sound or on the ear. What is dependent on the factors cannot be called a permanent self. What produced by causes cannot be called a permanent self. Therefore, your anger, the anger, the greed, is not a permanent self. If the anger is permanent self, okay, let me ask you. When you get angry, how long the anger lasts? It depends. It can be 5 minutes, it can be 1 week, it can be 1 month, it can be until next life. Until next life, I'm going to meet you and do something to you. Right? It depends on how big-hearted is your mind. Right? Okay. Let's say the anger lasts for 10 minutes. Okay. Then the anger ceases. If the anger is a permanent self, if the anger is I, it's my, myself, when the anger dies, when the anger passes away, you, I, myself should die together, right? If you identify anger as self, permanent I, myself, then when the anger ceases, I think you experience the anger ceases, right? Throughout your life. Anger is not permanent at all, right? So you can angry 2 days, but after that, he ceases. So if you identify anger as self, when the anger dies, when the anger passes away, you, me, and he and she should die together. But do you die together? No. No means that anger is not you. Anger is not myself. Anger is not himself. Anger is not herself, right? So you should contemplate in this way. Anger is not a self. Anger is not a permanent self. This is called investigation of Dharma. Dhamma vichaya, factor of enlightenment, one of the factor of enlightenment. Okay, then comes the nose. The nose, ganna, he knows the nose. He knows the smell. And dependent on nose and smell arises factor. What factor? It depends on individual. Then he also knows. For example, when we meditate in the ground floor, sometimes the smell comes. So one time the smell comes, then come to my ear, it come to my nose. That smell is so close to Maggie Mee. Because I cannot eat, so the smell come, I think of Maggie Mee. But the moment, then I know, go back to the breath. So depend on the smell and depend on the nose, the desire arise. Desire arise, desire to eat Maggie Mee arise. But the moment you know, just this samyojana, tancha pachanate, he also know this desire to eat something arise. Then immediately aware of it. Sometimes you don't have to know impermanent. You're just aware of it, and because your mindfulness is so sharp, the moment you're aware of it, it just went, gone. It just gone. So you got to train your mindfulness to that stage, so clear that whatever arises in your mind, you know it. There's no lapse of mindfulness. Your mindfulness is so continuous. Whatever arises, know it, then it's gone. It's called continuous mindfulness. And you have this continuous mindfulness, your wisdom also become very sharp. Okay? Then, tongue. He knows tongue, he knows taste. This part is very difficult to practice. When you go to the kitchen, dining hall, you know how much you have practiced when a food come to contact with tongue. How many of you mindful of your taste? Or how many of you overcome by the lust, by the desire, by the greed? I think most of people. Especially when you are hungry. It's very fast. Just want to feed the hunger first. Forget the mindfulness. After you full on, you forgot to mindful already. So don't make yourself too hungry. When you're hungry, you just cannot be mindful. So how to be mindful? There are many ways of mindful. There are many ways that you can be mindful when you are eating. Since we have four ways to establish our mindfulness, right? First one is what?
Body.
Okay. So, okay, body. You can practice. You can contemplate mindful of the body. Body is only conventional truth, but actually consists of what? Body is only conventional truth. The ultimate truth of body consists of four elements. So you can contemplate four elements when you are eating. Right? For example, when the food touch on the tongue, how do you feel?
Sweet,
sour, hot, cold, right? So if you feel hot, then you contemplate fire element, fire element, fire element. You choose the element which is clearer to you. Then you chew. What is this element? Wind element. You bite your teeth. Pop, pop, pop. It's called wind element. Then when you bite, then you will feel saliva start to flow in the mouth. But I assume you all eat so fast you can't even feel the saliva flowing in your mouth, right? How many of you feel the saliva start to flow in the mouth? No. If you don't feel it, means you eat so fast, you don't even notice the saliva flowing in the mouth. So please eat more slower tomorrow. You bite. If you have 10 bites, at least you must realize one bite, there's saliva flow in the mouth. The whole meal, it takes you 24 hours, 24 minutes. You must feel one time the saliva flow into your mouth. This is called flowing water element. Please check this, please practice tomorrow, okay? Bye bye. Don't swallow first until you feel the saliva flow, then you contemplate water element. Then you start to swallow. When you swallow, the wind push down the food into this. How to call this?
Surrounded.
Okay. Then, at that time, how should you contemplate? Pushing. Wind element. So you should contemplate wind element. You contemplate this three enough. If I give you more, then you get confused. So first, feel when the food touches the tongue. How do you feel? Hot, hard, soft. Soft is also earth element. You feel hard, rough. Sometimes the food is very rough. This also earth element. Then you feel heat is fire element. Then chewing, wind element. Saliva flows, water element. Then you swallow. Wind element. Then you repeat the same process again and again until you feel, what a burdensome to eat. I just finished a retreat and I teach this way. One of my students said, it's so burdensome to eat. I feel so tired wanting to eat. If you can achieve this, that's very good for you. Your greed for food were removed. Your greed for food will be removed. Then you feel when the time strive for meal, you say, "Ay, what a burdensome to go to the dining hall." Because attachment to food is a great hindrance. Attachment to food is a great hindrance. Even the Buddha teach many times. To get rid of the attachment to food is necessary for the progress in the Dharma. So if you can contemplate in this way, your greed, your desire for the food will become less and less until you feel that enough. One meal a day is better. If you don't contemplate in this way, you just eat until very full, then come to meditation, the time you feel so sleepy. The mind is very dull. Do you have the dull state of mind? Yes or no?
Yes.
Which sitting?
Afternoon.
Morning, no? Okay, after breakfast. Okay, I have one student in America. He always complained to me after morning section. Although after food, they do some work. But after that, the following section are always, he always experienced the dullness, very dull, dullness of the mind. Every retreat, he experienced the same. One day he said, enough. Then he take one meal a day because he feel that the dullness come from the food. And when if he eat, he cannot control his loba, his desire. He cannot control his greed for the food. So he eat until rich when come for meditation. Then the mind is occupied by this dull, D-U-L-L. Very dark, the mind is very dark. So he feel that he's wasting his time. So in order to make progress in his meditation, he decided to take one meal a day. He followed me. When I teach in America, I take only one meal a day. Because I also feel sleepy after breakfast. Then after taking one meal a day, he says, sister, all my darkness gone. Now my mind is so fresh. I have very good meditation. Therefore, I would like to advise you, eat less. Eat less in the morning. Don't feed the hunger too strongly. When you feel a little bit full, you got to stop already. But to stop is very difficult. To stop at the right amount is very difficult. Therefore, I teach you how to contemplate the four elements while eating until you feel so tired to eat. Then you achieve the goal. Okay? Okay. So you can contemplate in this way, or you can contemplate your feeling. As I say, feeling is also a base for you to establish mindfulness, right? So when the food comes to contact with the tongue, the moment that's contact, according to dependent origination, dependent on contact, that is feeling. Pasa pachaya vedana. Dependent on contact, that's feeling. So the moment the food comes to contact with the tongue, there is one type of feeling arises in you. You have to observe it. If the food is agreeable to you, what type of feeling?
Pleasant
feeling. If the food is not agreeable to you because so spicy, suddenly it feels so spicy, it's not agreeable to you, then unpleasant feeling arises. Do you aware of this? You aware of this? Okay. Then you continue to contemplate unpleasant feeling, whether it lasts or it passes away. You observe it, mindful of your pleasant feeling, see whether it lasts or it passes away. If it passes away, sure passes away one, because another mouth is so agreeable, immediately the unpleasant feeling passes away. New pleasant feeling arises. This is very common, right? Then after that, finish, you take another not disagreeable, unpleasant feeling arises again. Then you quickly take another one, which is you like, which the food you like, then pleasant feeling arises again. So the pleasant feeling and unpleasant feeling keep on arising while you are testing your food. Sometimes it's so fast, we can't even discern, we just eat, I don't care. No, just eat, eat, feed the hunger enough. This is called non-practicing yogi. The way non-practicing yogi is to ignore everything. Just satiate your desire enough. Make you feel happy, then when the loba is fit, when the greed is fit, then enough. This non-practicing yogis, the way of non-practicing yogi. Okay, so while eating, you can contemplate bodily contemplation, kaya nupasana, by way of four elements, or you can contemplate your feelings. And also, you can contemplate your mind, mental state as well. How to contemplate? When the food touches your tongue, you have pleasant feeling. After pleasant feeling, what will you do? What will you do? Eat more, yes, eat more, right? Eat more, so you stretch your hand, want to eat more. Not only eat more, want to eat very fast, right? Not only eat more, want to eat very fast, because at that moment, your mind is inclined to the greed. So you want to eat fast to satiate your greed. So you want to eat very fast, stretch your hand, eat very fast. not until the saliva flowing, no time to see the saliva flowing. Just want to feed your greed on it. Then you must be mindful. The moment you want to eat very fast, you know this greed already. Because you want to feel the greed that make you happy, right? So you must be mindful, okay, the greed has arisen in me. The greed has arisen in me. And see greed as greed. The mind affected by greed as the mind affected by greed. And see whether it continue or it passes away. Hold your mindfulness. Sustaining mindfulness, hold it and see your greed, whether it continue or it passes away. When you practice in this way, it may take you 40 minutes to finish your meal, right? Because you got to stop and contemplate the greed. After that, no desire to eat already, right? No desire to eat. So you can contemplate, Contemplate by way of four elements, or you can contemplate by way of feelings, or you can contemplate by way of different mental state that arises. Or you can contemplate by way of Dhamma. The way of contemplation of Dhamma is a little bit complicated. For example, the foot touches your tongue. Then you must, according to Dhamma, Dhamma Nupassana, contemplation on Dhamma, then you must understand this is tongue, this is taste. Dependent on these two, Samyojana factor arises. And you must know what type of factor. It can be anger, can be greed. Then you also must know that factor. So knowing that factor, you may ask, it's overlap with the citta nupassana, overlap with contemplation on mind, right? It's overlapped, but Dhamma nupassana, it goes further, it investigates also. Citta nupassana, you just see mind affected by anger as mind affected by anger. You don't investigate. But Dhamma Nupassana, contemplation on Dhamma, you also know factor that arise. Then you ask yourself, why that factor? Why that anger arise? Why that greed arise? Oh, because of the contact of the tongue and the agreeable food or taste. That Samyojana, that refinement arise. If you practice in this way, it is called Dhamma Nupassana Satipatthana. So by eating itself, you can practice four foundation of mindfulness. Okay, is it clear? Yes, then put into practice. Don't forget. When come to dining hall, don't forget. At the moment the eye come to contact with the food, we satisfy the greed first. Other thing, put aside. No. Therefore, slow down is very important. And don't make yourself too hungry. If you're too hungry, you just cannot be mindful. Okay? So, this is the way how to practice Dhamma Nupassana Satipatthana.
So that is considered food meditation?
This is called eating meditation. Not food meditation, eating meditation. Eating while you are mindful. I think this all, okay, that much, enough to explain to you how to practice four foundation of mindfulness. But I want to make some conclusion again, to emphasize again so that it goes into your consciousness. This Satipatthana Sutta, we can, why it's called the foundation of mindfulness? Because this four foundation, what are the four? Body is not a body, it's four element, okay? Body is conventional truth. So whenever I say body, you should understand only four elements, okay? Body, feeling, different state of mind, and the Dhamma. Dhamma, I have shared four types of, four subject already. So these four are the places, are the basis for you to establish mindfulness. Don't forget, for you to establish mindfulness. However, mindfulness itself is not enough. Mindfulness itself is not enough. Therefore, after Buddha mentioned, you must be mindful, anger as anger. You must mindful, unpleasant feeling as unpleasant feeling. You must mindful, four element as four element. You must mindful, your breath as breath. And you must mindful, Dhamma object as Dhamma object. Further, Buddha also explained, he sees the arising, factor of the four elements, of the feeling, of the mental state, different mental state, and of the Dhamma. He sees the arising factor, and he also sees the vanishing factor, or passing away, the factor, passing away. So he sees arising and he sees passing away. What does it mean?
Impermanent.
It's very clearly stated in the text, in the sutta. However, nowadays, many teachers only emphasize first part. Mindfulness, mindfulness, mindfulness. They forget the last part. This I experience when I travel the world. I experience when through the feedback from students, many people just emphasize mindfulness without much wisdom. So the last part of Satipatthana Sutta is to see the arising of four elements, arising of feeling, arising of mental state, arising of Dhamma, including the passing away, both. If only see arising, you never see passing away, what happened to your mind? Okay, answer me. If you only see arising, never see passing away, what happened into your mind? Yeah, your perception towards the body, towards the four elements, towards the feeling, towards the different mental state of mind, towards the Dhamma will be always permanent, right? Because you only see arising, you never see it passing away, it passes away. So you have distorted perception of permanent. Therefore, you must see it arises, also must see it passes away by holding, by sustaining mindfulness. Don't move your mind from one object to another object. You take one object, then sustain your mindfulness there, then the nature of arising and passing away will be revealed. Okay? So, and when you only see arising, never see vanishing, or never see passing away, you entertain the wrong view of eternalism. Sasatha ditti, eternalism. What is this eternalism says? Eternalism says eternal soul transmigrate from one birth to another birth. Do you have this idea, this concept or not? When you die, when we die, don't say you died, we die, okay? When we die, when we harbor or we adapt ideology that eternal soul transmigrate from this life to another life. Do we have this ideology?
No.
No. Then what do you think? When you die and rebirth take place, what do you think? Okay, now I stop. You talk. Okay? You share your view. I need to rest my throat.
What is the question?
Oh my gosh. My gosh. Alright, somebody repeat.
Understand all this, you know, from the life to another, although it's not the same, I understand that there is really a continuity, right? So, to my understanding, a continuity is kind of eternity. Not exactly, but there is eternity means continuity of something.
Eternity
without
and
ending.
No. Eternity and continuity is completely different things. Okay.
In what sense?
Okay.
Because I don't understand.
Okay. Continuity means arising and passing away. But you perceive continuity is non-stop. What you perceive continuity is a one stretch, non-stop one.
Okay.
to in the teaching of the Buddha, continuity is arising and passing away, and arises, re-arises and passing away, and re-arises and passing away. Why the phenomena re-arises? Okay, why the phenomena arises, passes away, and it does not stop there? Why? Why?
Because impermanent, and it depends on conditions.
Impermanent, arising and passing away is impermanent already.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
No, then why it arises?
Conditions.
Because the causes for it to cease completely without remainder is still there. The causes for its arising is still there. Therefore, it re-arises. And it re-arises as the nature of all phenomena. It passes away again. Then it re-arises and passes away, re-arises. And this is called continuity of mind. It's not an eternalism, right? The problem is that you regard it. You regard continuity is the same thing. I regard continuity is the process of arising and passing away, and re-arises and passing away. If you can.
What I don't understand in this point is that passing away is passing away. It has to end.
But it
goes to a certain point that it really doesn't stop, because there are some conditions that arises again.
Yes, yes.
So
yes.
This arising again means it didn't stop at all, 100%.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So what's the conflict?
Continuity.
This is a continuity. Okay, so this is a continuity. Then how can you call it eternalism? Eternalism means never dies. Never die, called eternalism.
Mm-hmm.
But you understand continuity is arising, passing away, arising, passing away. So it's two completely different words, different meaning.
We are talking about idiomatic things, right?
We are talking about what?
Idiomatic, the way to understand a word. But in reality, the thing is to understand the concept, not exactly the words, right?
Okay, maybe I give you an example how rebirth take place first. Then maybe you can understand better, right? Okay. Maybe we should continue tomorrow.
There is one question.
Okay.
About eternity.
Okay.
The soul is eternal.
There's no soul in the teaching of the Buddha. First, you got to reject the soul first.
Okay.
Because Buddha talked about ultimate truth.
Then eternal not exist.
Soul is concept only. No existing in the Buddha's teaching. Ultimate truth is five aggregates. And this five aggregate is arising and passing away. It's nature. So no soul in the teaching of the Buddha. You got to remove this ideology first. Otherwise, very difficult for the teaching to go into your mind. Okay?
Okay, teacher, how about we talk about energy? We know from science, energy doesn't die, it just changes from one form to another.
Yeah.
So can we say, in respect of energy, it's actually eternal, because energy doesn't die. So karmic force is a kind of energy. So karmic force doesn't die. Energy doesn't die, just change.
If you say never die, that is also against the teaching of the Buddha.
Like energy, the energy doesn't
That's why this simile is not correct. If you say energy never die, meaning our being never die.
Just change the potential energy change to
It will die only when the causes are exhausted, then it dies. You cannot say like that. If you say like that, this is called eternalism view. That's why when I went to USA, they showed me a documentary. All the scientists say that energy transfer to one place and one place never die. Change form, never die. This never die, they argue, keep on arguing. Argue, never. In the teaching of Buddha, so easily. Why it never dies? Because the cause for is cessation is not there yet. When the cause for is completely cessation is there, then it dies out. So the scientist not yet reach the final point that this energy is sustained by the causes. The scientist does not go into this aspect, therefore they keep on arguing energy die or not die. Okay? Okay, let me answer your question now. Whether you are understand or not understand, just keep your mind open. Okay. What to record in another one? In the teaching of the Buddha, when a person is going to die, he will see some nimitta, some sign. Okay? There are three signs. One is called kamma nimitta. One is called gati nimitta. One is called kamma itself. Three signs. Huh? Gati nimitta, the sign of destination. The sign of destination indicates where it will take rebirth. Where? Whether in heaven, in hell, in animal kingdom,
ghost,
etc. Okay? This is called gati nimitta. So let's say if he's going to reborn in hell, he will see the fire burning come up from the earth. So he will see it. Only seen by him, other people cannot see one. Because this is his own resultant of his karma. Not my karma, I cannot see. Right? This is called gati nimitta, the sign of destination. Another one is karma nimitta, the sign of karma. Let's say, now you are performing the good karma as monastic, temporary. Then, when this karma ripens, because you keep 10 precepts, this is very good, wholesome karma. And when this karma ripens, then you see yourself as a samanera again, or samaneri again. This is called karma. You see yourself, or you see yourself like listening to a talk again, like today. You see yourself, before dying, you see yourself as a samanera or samaneri listening to the talk. Then you die. This is called karma. The karma you have performed, right? Another one called karma nimitta, the sign of karma. For example, you donate amount of money to the monastery. Then you pass that money to the office, they say. Then when you die, before dying, you see that amount of money that you donated. Or the ropes you donated. That if you see like that, this is called karma nimitta. The things that you use that thing to perform the good karma or bad karma. Like butcher when he die, he see the knife. So the knife is his karma nimitta. So holding on the mind, holding on that karma nimitta. Let's say you donated that amount of money. So before dying, the mind holding on to that karma nimitta, then the karmic energy push the consciousness, dying consciousness, push the consciousness to another place. That place is where you are going to take rebirth. Maybe in heaven, let's say in heaven. And because ignorance is not completely uprooted yet, right? As an ordinary person, we still have ignorance, right? So ignorant think to take rebirth is a wonderful thing. To reborn in heaven is a wonderful thing. And the ignorant, because of ignorance, to take rebirth is a wonderful thing, then the craving, crave for one life, crave for new life. So these are the forces that push the consciousness to new rebirth, to new life. So the consciousness then die, that consciousness arise, passes away. Continuity of consciousness. Consciousness is always continuous. There's no gap in between. No gap, say this consciousness stop. Then after half day, consciousness continue. No, this is not the law of consciousness. The law of consciousness say that when the consciousness arises, passes away, without a gap, it arises, passes away, without a gap, arises and passes away. Okay? So when a dead consciousness arises, without a gap, rebirth consciousness immediately takes place. In this case, in heaven. And the first consciousness in one's life is called Patisandhi Citta, rebirth consciousness. And is this consciousness same as that consciousness in a previous life or not?
No.
Yes or no?
No.
Yes or no?
Yes or no?
Is this rebirth consciousness not now in a heaven? Huh? Is this same as the death consciousness of a samarera, they say, a human being? Yes or no? How can it be the same? Right, you got to say no. Only then I can continue. Right, how can it be the same? Logical thinking also not the same. Now, rebirth consciousness in heaven, the death consciousness in human world, how can it be the same? Completely different, right? So, it's not the same. But why this rebirth consciousness arises? This rebirth consciousness arises depend on the karma, the good karma one performed in the past based on ignorance, craving and clinging, right? Based on the karma performed in a previous life based on ignorance, thinking that rebirth is enjoyable, therefore craving arises, clinging arises. And based on this defilements, then karma is performed, and every karma leaves behind energy. Yeah? The energy push that consciousness to new rebirth. Therefore, this rebirth consciousness is also connected with the past life, karmic force. But it's not a new, it's not exactly the same. How can it be exactly the same? Even the body is different, right? One is human body, one is heavenly body. So the consciousness is not exactly the same as past one, neither otherness. Neither otherness means that it's also not the same, also not without connection. Understand?
Not separately.
Not separately or not without connection. Without connection, this new consciousness cannot arise. Every consciousness must arise depend on causes, and the karmic is the cause that push this consciousness to arise in a new place. So it's connected, but you cannot say exactly the same. This is the middle path. Neither the same, nor otherness, nor completely different. Okay. Sutta didn't mention so clearly. Why? Because all the sutta is ask you all the sutta only ask you to be aware, mindful, wisdom, to know impermanence, suffering, non-self, and to cut you off out of samsara. Therefore, sutta wouldn't go into such detail. Only Abhidhamma will explain the whole detail. And the Abhidhamma is based on the sutta also. It just arranged it very systematically. If not, Abhidhamma cannot come about. Okay? I think enough for today. You need time to digest, okay?